Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, if you're not having fun on radio, then get away from the microphone because no one wants to listen to a cranky old man. Welcome to the program. The first thing I learned when I went in this business is have fun on the radio. And let me tell you something, not too many people are still having fun on the radio. They're running scared and you can hear it, and that's why people are turning off the radio. Now, it's hard to have fun when you have a Marxist president who is destroying jobs and you have a first lady gallivanting around the world spending money like the Queen of England was in the 19th century or the 18th century, being snubbed by the president of South Africa and it not appearing in the news because they cover the backsides of the president and the first lady like never before in history. It's very difficult, and that's why I tell you we're going to have some fun in the Savage Nation. In addition to all of the news of the day, which I'm going to do, I'm going to do something that continues the discussion we started yesterday. Remember I was saying, how did we go from a time when I was a kid, for example, when even poor Italian people who were in my grew up in my neighborhood, they looked up to opera stars. Even the poorest Italians could sing an aria or try to sing an aria. Their role models were people such as Mario Lanza, later on Pavarotti. And take a look at the degeneracy today of a culture where Jersey Shore and the Sopranos are held up as the role models for Italians. Or take a look at the Jewish people. When I was a boy, Jonas Salk was held up as a role model. Take a look at what we have now, Anthony Weiner. When I was a boy, Martin Luther King Jr. was a role model for black people. Take a look at the rapper garbage we have today in the United States of America. And so without further ado, let's go to the wonderful sound production describing the role models and the leadership of the past to the present, from dignity to depravity, on the Savage Nation.
We have fun, we're fearless. I mean, we go into the room, we kill it. We go into the club, we kill it. Photo shoots, we kill it. We're in Miami, we're killing it. On the beach, we're killing it.
That's just how we do since day one.
I believe that the future generations will look back upon us and judge us as to whether we have been wise or whether we have been profligate and wasteful.
I will not yield to the gentleman, and the gentleman will observe regular order. The gentleman will observe regular order.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
I said a hip.
So there we go, from Pavarotti to the degenerate filth of Jersey Shore, the illiterate morons, from Jonas Salk to Anthony Weiner, from Martin Luther King Jr. to a rapper who can hardly speak the English language. Now let's go to the next one, which we put together. We're going to compare, for those of you who are not of any of those ethnicities or proclivities, we're going to go to a comparison between Dylan Thomas, a Welsh poet, and Amy Winehouse, an otherwise nobody who somebody doesn't love. We're then going to go to Edward R. Murrow compared with Chris Matthews, a man who belongs in an Alzheimer's ward, in my opinion. We're then going to show you a Hispanic gentleman named Luis Alvarez, one of the great physicists who you probably never heard of, who got where he was without affirmative action, without the government helping him along. And then we're going to compare Luis Alvarez, scientist, Nobel Prize winner, with Representative Gutierrez. Then we're going to compare Madame Curie to Lady Gaga right now on the Savage Nation.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no.
We must remember always that accusation is not proof and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law.
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
Steady.
I was following my father's advice. I said to myself, let's just sit down in a chair and spend all evening and see what you can come up with.
In the same manner as we have stood up, when the rule of law said to a woman, you will not earn equal pay, when someone of sexual orientation is abused, we say that will not be tolerated.
Magnesium oxide, 99%, other extraneous matter, 0.001%.
I wrote this speech, this address, myself. My address to you today is called the prime rib of America.
Is this over your head, under your head, on your head, or between the eyes? Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm trying to do something undone in the history of talk radio. I realize that it's not Democrats bad, Republicans good. I realize that that's basically what talk radio has become. I mean, it's been this way for too long. I'm sorry. It is true that Democrats are bad, but it's not true the Republicans are good. It's true that there's not a good Democrat in the entire and amongst the Republicans, about 80% of them belong in the same category. So now that we've covered politics, let's go on to what I was talking about, the dignity to depravity concept on the Savage Nation. And I will then give you the news headlines as well. I'm going to go to michaelsavage.com where I've collected stories that are amazing. Is Hugo Chavez dying? He hasn't returned to the public eye after surgery in Cuba. Let us wish him the best. Let us hope that he crosses the River Styx as soon as possible and joins his predecessors on the other side. We then have an article on the Great Depression that we're living through here in the United States of America, where the job situation is far worse than the vermin in the media will tell you. A new report came out, and my headline is Marxist President Destroy Jobs. It's an interesting article by a liberal named Mortimer Zuckerman, who says that we now have more idle men and women than at any time since the Great Depression. I don't think you know that, because the vermin in the media are hiding that fact from you so that the fake president, the imposter, can get reelected. Also on michaelsavage.com, this is a horrendous story. The cops have arrested a suspect in the Long Island drugstore killings. It actually got me sick to see what this piece of garbage did. And he was so evil. He went in there to rob oxycodone for his junkie wife, his fat, disgusting junkie wife. He shot the pharmacist. He shot an 18-year-old girl who was working in the pharmacy. Then in walked two customers, a 71-year-old and a 30-something. He executes them, and he walks out calmly. And you want to hear what he did to top it all off? He made his face look like he was a black man, and he put on a fake beard to make himself look like a slim black man. He's white trash, a tattooed white trash vermin from the neighborhood. It's sickening what drugs are doing in this country. And you say end the war on drugs? End the war on drugs? You want more of these psychos running around the country? As bad as the war on drugs has become, picture what it'll be like when everybody is addicted to something. NASA scientist accused of profiting from global warming. Take a look at Mr. Hansen over there. He ran a rogue operation out of his office at NASA, doing business with the fake climate science organizations that were benefiting from the money that they were getting from the global warming fraud. It's unreal what's going on. There's another article, The Gang That Couldn't Sting Straight. Don't miss that one, because Attorney General Eric Holder may wind up in jail for this one. There's so many other stories on michaelsavage.com. We'll get to them in a moment. Let's go to the callers first. Ernest in Pittsburgh, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're first up. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, pleasure to speak to you today. I just wanted to say that, you know, as a young Italian-American, I don't look to the trash people like Jersey Shore as role models whatsoever.
So tell us who is prominent in the Italian-American community Name two or three prominent Italian-Americans who you look up to.
I mean, well, we look to people from the past, you know, such as Dante.
No. Let's not go to Raphael and Michelangelo. I'm talking about, and I'm not challenging you, I'm trying to make a bigger point, which is that the schools and the vermin in the media won't even let you know who the role models are. Can you name a currently living Italian-American who is a role model for you?
It's hard to say nowadays because,
I'll do it for you, and I'm not Italian. How about the Supreme Court Justice Alito?
Yes, sir.
Now the question is, why is he not even known to be an Italian-American? Because the vermin, the gutter rats, the sewer rats, those who put the filth in the sewer pipe running out of New York's media outlets don't want you to have a positive role model, especially a conservative Italian. Instead, they'd rather have a Guido from the garbage held up as a role model so you too can become a junkie like them.
Absolutely, sir. It's a true disgrace.
So my point is, it's the vermin in the media. It's guys like those who are running MSNBC and NBC like Pil Griffin, who have anti-American, anti-police, anti-military, anti-family, anti-male, anti-white rhetoric day and night on their channels, and you wonder why the people grow up? They have no role models.
True, sir. It's
all right, of course it's true. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Fearless. I mean, we go into the room, we kill it. We go into the club, we kill it. Photo shoots, we kill it. We're in Miami, we're killing it. On the beach, we're killing it.
That's just how we do since day one. It's just called smashing everything we do. And
you pieces of garbage. Get off my show, you low-life rats. No one will know you in three more months. From Mario Lanza to Dario Basuda in one generation. And you wonder why your son comes home with his pants hanging under the crack in his behind. You wonder why he doesn't want to be anything but a dirtbag like them, getting drunk and getting stoned and running after white trash on the beach with tattoos up and down his body. You can blame the vermin in the media. That's who you can blame. Look, I'm on a warpath right now, and I realize I may alienate a good percentage of the audience who simply wants me to talk about the Democrat-Republican. There's a lot to talk about there, but I'm not going to do it right now. You got the leader of the left-wing gang. He's going to speak a little later today and tell you about he's suddenly withdrawing troops from Afghanistan 2 years after he became president. I'm long on record to withdraw the troops from Afghanistan, by the way. I don't care what the generals say. Let them send their sons to die there, to fight and die in Afghanistan. What are we there for? No one knows. Nobody knows. I've spoken to a returning military. No one knows what the mission is. They keep them on drugs. Half of the guys are on drugs over there, if not more. They drug them up like guinea pigs. You don't know that little side of the story, do you? The government is so abusive of the men in the military that they keep them and rotating them and they put them on drugs. They drug them up and they keep them on drugs to keep them in that hellhole. No one knows what they're doing there except the fat cats in the contracting business in Washington. So don't get me started on that. I mean, I'm on record with Afghanistan. New York, WOR, Julie, welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I have to tell you, I was absolutely thrilled with your comparison. I couldn't have done it.
I hope you're not thrilled in the way that Chris Matthews was thrilled with a thrill up his leg.
Not at all. You showed what art, class, intelligence, beauty, in comparison to the garbage in and garbage out that we are fed day in and day out by the liberal media and by every.
That's right. Say the words liberal media. There is a liberal media. In fact, it's 99% liberal vermin media. And when someone dares speak out in favor of the United States of America or in favor of the greatness of the founding fathers, they're jeered by the vermin in the liberal media. That's right. Take a look at the garbage they put out in Hollywood. When have you last seen a positive role model for a white male coming out of an advertising agency or out of Hollywood? Every white male that's shown in an ad is some idiot falling over himself, tripping backwards, setting himself on fire, slamming his head in the refrigerator, while wifey saves the day.
Well, we need to start looking at every Italian-American, Jewish-American, Polish-American that's serving in the United States military today defending us, and hold them up as our heroes. And those
the only military hero that you will ever see published by the vermin in the liberal media is a dead American military hero in order to show you how bad all wars are. You understand how they work it? When have you last seen them extol a soldier who is actually active duty? Never. They extol the dead ones in order to show you how bad the war is, and we should never fight for anything. Oh, God help this country. God help us. The revolution has to occur within the media, and I'm praying that when Comcast finally takes over at NBC, they get rid of Phil Griffin and the other liberals in that company who have destroyed the Peacock Network with their liberal crap. Anti-American, anti-family, anti-male, anti-white, you name it, they make it. I pray Comcast brings some sense and saves one of the networks and gives it back to the American people. Sacramento, Lurie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Well, hi, Michael. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I was born there. I'm Italian, but I'm an American. And I don't like the way the Italians have been portrayed. I don't even like the way the Americans have been portrayed. You know, I went to PS 51. I went to PS 90 in New York. I live in California now.
All right, well, hold on. Now, since you're such a traditionalist, can you name one prominent Italian-American who is living today other than Samuel Alito?
No.
Why? Why can't you? You're a traditionalist.
I can't. I'm trying to think. I don't watch all these shows. I don't believe in any of these shows.
Right. So The Sopranos comes along. I absolutely love the show, but it stereotypes Italians in the most negative way. That was a follow-up to The Godfather, of course, two decades before. But nevertheless, or a decade before, 2 decades before, the fact of the matter is, name another show that portrays Italian-Americans in a positive light. You can't.
No, I can't. I cannot.
So I had to go and I'm playing Mario Lanza. I'm playing Pavarotti. By no means are these the only Italian-Americans of the past who are worthy of a distinction. But I'm trying to make another point, which is that you do not see positive role models in almost any ethnic group today. Every role model is a dirtbag, a drug addict, an alcoholic, a skirt chaser, an America hater, a wimp. Everything negative about the human race is portrayed in the role models as selected by the vermin in the media, those who pump the garbage through the sewer pipe that comes out of New York City and Hollywood. And I'll use the word again, the sewer pipes of Hollywood. The sewer pipes of Hollywood need to be cleaned out.
Savage.
I mean, there is good news out there. Let us wish him the best. I mean, if you want to do that. But there's an article I posted. Is Hugo Chavez dying? And the reports trickling out of Venezuela that the psychopath may be in much worse shape than has been reported. He went to Cuba, got sick while visiting Fidel Castro, had a surgery, and they say it's a pelvic abscess. And now it's going on and on and on. 11 days, false alarms over the date of his return. And all of a sudden, he's not back, and he's still in Cuba. No one knows anything about his health. The former official who asked not to be named pointed out that a pelvic abscess, a pus-filled cavity that can result from injury or infection, is a reaction to a condition. Now, what condition? But what does that mean by a reaction to a condition? What are they implying he has if he has a pus-filled cavity in his pelvis? I mean, my mind's running in a few directions right now. He has an abscess? Now, Hugo Chavez is one of the sickest men. And one of the most dangerous, he's made an alliance with the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad of Iran. He's trying to encircle America. I mean, he's a real threat to our national security. And he's only 56 years old. He's a little on the heavy side now. He was once a slim tank commander, wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, claims to have been health conscious, but he is known for drinking quarts of coffee every day. So what happened? He goes to Cuba. He meets a former dictator, Fidel Castro. He gets acute pain and is rushed into surgery. And he's almost been invisible ever since. So we don't know, but is our administration involved? I want to show you how my mind works. Now, I'm going to jump from this to where my mind goes with this story. Given that I'm also a novelist, in addition to being a talk show host, I can be very hard-nosed and pragmatic, but my novel Abuse of Power is coming out in only a few months from St. Martin's Press, and it's a thriller. So I am a novelist as well. So the novelist in me would say, wait a minute now. Chavez goes to Cuba, he gets sick, and he goes into the hospital. Did they poison him in Cuba as a favor to America in exchange for a favor from America to Fidel Castro, who certainly is threatened by the growth of this new dictator south of the border in the southern hemisphere? In other words, maybe, you know, the Castro brothers are jealous that Chavez has become so powerful and he's a threat to them. And as in any other power play, there is no room, you know, there's always finagle. So maybe they worked a deal out with the CIA. And they gave him a little poison polonium down. They gave him a polonium sushi meal, a little polonium sushi that was left over from London. They flew it into Havana. Or maybe it was polonium-enriched sugar cane or polonium-laced coffee. I don't know. I'm saying it's a nice novelist. It's a nice idea for a novelistic twist, isn't it? All right, again, I'm talking in circles. My mind works in those directions. It's lucky it's only a talk show. I'm a man of no power whatsoever. But I would say that pus-filled cavity does define him quite aptly. Unless they were talking about Chris Matthews, I'm not sure. You could say that that would define most of the talkers on MSNBC, pus-filled cavity. Ooh, that's disgusting. True, but disgusting. You know, watching a bum throw up in the gutter is disgusting too, but it's real. You understand that? And so watching what goes on in the American media may be disgusting, but you're watching the downfall of a great enterprise that is poisoning the mind of the American people. You understand or what? New York, WOR. Richard, let's go back to you. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, here's a strange kind of idea to throw out. If you look at the history of the United States, we used to be on the gold standard. FDR took us off the gold standard in 1933, and the gold window closed in 1971 by Nixon.
Nixon, right.
That's right. I think the average person knows that the value of their money is depreciating over time.
Yes.
So everybody walks around with money in their pockets that they call money. It's not gold. It's paper dollars.
Right, right.
They know depreciates.
Right.
What impact does that have on morality of society and corruption and decline? If you feel that the money that you hold, that you place value on, is continually being inflated away.
So it's an interesting metaphor you're creating. The creation of a currency that has no value whatsoever, just an assumed value, and the debasement of the standards or the ethics or the morality of a nation.
You can debase your currency, which is what we all depend on. We all depend to live on this thing we carry around in our pockets.
Right.
And if that can be debased, then why can't everything else also be debased? What holds value if the thing you depend on, which is money, and that's more important to all of us to live than just about...
Well, we're all worried about Bernanke and Geithner, these two losers who are absolutely incompetent at what they're doing, selected by the Marxist president. Their whole solution is to throw money at the problem, and unemployment went up, not down. You know that Obama spent almost $1 billion or more on the so-called stimulus with Nancy Pelosi dispersing it to her friends. Nobody got that money. Where'd the money go? It went in a few hands. And what happened? Were jobs created? No, the opposite is true. Jobs were lost as a result of the stimulus. The only thing that can stimulate the economy are less regulation, lower taxes, get rid of the red tape, and you'll see the economy boom.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Now, as far as the currency goes, would you argue that we should go back to a gold standard?
You need to have something which ties the value so that you can't get away with murder. And basically, you can't have this thing depreciating at this rapid rate over time. And this has been going on for decades. This is not a current phenomenon.
Absolutely, but that's how the economy has been kept aloft, which is through this sub rosa inflation that we know exists. There's a strange paradox going on right now with an inflation and a deflation at the same time. And maybe I'm not using the right term when I say deflation, but housing prices have dropped an astonishing, I think it's 22%. And the entire housing market collapsed by 21% at the time of the Great Depression. So we've actually had a greater loss in housing values in the last few years than we had during the Great Depression back in the late 20s and early 30s. That's number one. We're not blaming Obama for that. We're blaming the bankers and Bush for that, as well as the others who created the housing bubble in the investment community, which we know was built on a house of cards. But then at the same time, our dollars in the bank are losing value because there's no interest being paid. And the reason there's no interest being paid is because Bernanke keeps printing money and artificially keeps inflation rate at near zero. But we all know that there's an inflation going on. All you got to do is look at the price of coffee and commodities. In other words, the real value of things can be seen in the cost of commodities, such as oil, sugar, coffee, wheat, soybeans, you name it. Am I right about that?
It's true.
So this is why the Arabs, stupid they're not, they have the principal commodity that the world needs, which is oil, correct? The entire world runs on that commodity. There's not a nation on earth that doesn't run on a petroleum distillate, correct or incorrect? I'm right about that. So he who controls the petroleum distillates controls the world. That's our friends in the Middle East, the wonderful people who have given us Sharia law, put women in burqas, cut hands off. The wonderful advanced people of the Middle East control the world's economy one way or the other. So when they see that they were getting $40 a barrel for oil 10 years ago, whatever the number of years was, and all of a sudden that $40 no longer buys them the same amount of prostitution in New York City and London and elsewhere, they raise the cost of oil in order to buy the same hooker that they used to be able to buy 20 years ago for $40. They now have to pay $140 for them. I'm giving you an example.
But here's the thing. Here's a question you have to ask. We in this country are capable of producing massive amounts of natural gas, and we could be moving over large mobile fleets of delivery trucks, and all sorts of other things to using natural gas, which costs dramatically less. Nobody is asking the question why the U.S. government, why the Congress, why the president is not pushing.
Why? Because it's called monopoly. These are stooges of the oil industry. The seven sister oil companies run the world with their Arabic buddies. Now, the fact of the matter is we have oil, not only natural gas, but we have enough oil in the slope for slope drilling in Alaska to satisfy our needs for 100 years by what I've read.
Michael, ExxonMobil bought a company called XTO, as well as Chevron. A lot of these companies are buying up natural gas companies now. Natural gas is incredibly cheap. Think about the number of jobs.
Monopoly, 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 monopoly. Where is the antitrust division of the U.S. Justice Department right now? The answer is nowhere. Nowhere to be found.
They're blocking the use of natural gas, which we should be using in this country.
You know, I want to remind people of the last great populist movement in America that I can recall instantly, and that would be the one of Teddy Roosevelt. This is a long time ago. Teddy Roosevelt ran on a populist slogan of bust the trust. So you're probably aware of that, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Very few people know that. But Teddy Roosevelt, in addition to being known as a rough rider and the guns and the this and the that, Teddy Roosevelt ran a very clever populist campaign called Bust the Trusts. And he was talking about monopolies such as Standard Oil, which was run by John D. Rockefeller, who owned the entire oil industry. So Teddy Roosevelt won the presidency, and he had his Justice Department go after Standard Oil to break up the company because he said we cannot have one company running the entire oil industry. Cleverly, though, the businessmen outfoxed Teddy Roosevelt's idiots in the Justice Department, because instead of there being a single Standard Oil of New Jersey, of Standard Oil, there suddenly became hundreds of them: Standard Oil of California, Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of Pennsylvania, Standard Oil of Rhode Island, Standard Oil of this, Standard Oil of that. So they broke it up and they owned them anyway. That's what he did. That's what Rockefeller did.
But Michael, today, the bulk of global production is from national oil companies in places like Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Mexico, Russia. These are all national oil companies. The bulk is not produced by U.S. producers. What I'm saying is something different. Do you have any idea?
You're saying shift to natural gas is what you're saying.
I'm saying that the number of jobs we could create in this country, the benefit to the American public, you could create hundreds of thousands. Maybe.
I agree. I wouldn't even care if you're in the natural gas business and you're just doing this to promote your product. I agree with you 100%. But there's also oil in the permafrost of Alaska. Underneath the permafrost, but the psychotics called environmentalists, and I am an ardent conservationist, not an environmentalist, by the way, the psychotics who have no knowledge of science at all say, oh, you can't drill in the tundra. You can't drill up there because you'll destroy the environment. Now, I heard these same arguments back in the 70s when the Alaska pipeline was being argued about. They were going to build an Alaska pipeline going from Prudhoe Bay or to Prudhoe Bay over the ground. Well, the schmucks, the illiterate morons, the science illiterates were saying, oh, you're going to destroy the tundra. You're going to destroy the caribou by putting a hot pipe over the ground. Well, you know what happened, don't you? What happened is the caribou now hover beneath the oil pipeline. They like the warmth that runs through that area. It's like steam heat, baby. I mean, for a million years, they were living in the cold, and they adapted with big fur coats and, you know, shaggy coats and fur coats and overcoats, your coat, my coat, his coat, because it was cold up there. Now the man comes along and he builds a pipeline over the ground, elevated, to make sure that they didn't interfere with the migration of the caribou. And so the caribou now hang out underneath the pipe, because the oil's warmer than the permafrost. And they like it. They enjoy it. It's warmer than before. Now, I'm not saying the caribou are suddenly going to lose their coats and put on bikinis, but I am saying to you that the environmental illiterates of yesterday have produced another generation today with a myth called global warming. As a matter of fact, I know a gentleman who had a discussion with one of these environmental illiterates not too long ago about drilling in the Alaska Slope. And he said to them, would you be in favor of drilling in the Alaska Slope? And the person, of course not. And he said, well, why not? He said, because it would destroy the environment. Then he said, well, you'd be opposed to, the man then said to the environmental illiterate, he said, you would be opposed to clear cutting up there, wouldn't you? And the environmental illiterate said, oh, absolutely, I'm opposed to clear cutting up there in that part of Alaska. And the man said to him, sir, there are no trees up there in the tundra. It's permafrost. Get it? I'll be right back. Savage. Take that drink, huh? Hey, Guido, how do you get them drinks down, huh? Hey, Guido, let me hear some of them from Jersey Shore now. Let me hear the Jersey Shore people. Let me hear them.
We have fun, we're fearless. I mean, we go into the room, we kill it. We go into the club, we kill it.
You're really a real big shot. You're really way up there. You're way up there. You're really up there. Yeah, you're really cool with the pants under your behind. Yeah, you're really cool. Yeah, you're way up there. They rape the culture. Two rapists they put up there. But that's what they're... I don't blame them. I mean, if you have a degenerate, you have a degenerate. But when you have a dirtbag who runs the network, who is a bigger degenerate than he is, what do you expect the degenerates to do but take the money and run and have some fun? You got to blame the people who take these dirtbags. Mob wives they make as a role model for Italian girls. You should have got me some soundbite because people cannot believe this. And I also played some, because I probably missed it in the beginning of the show. I mean, I try to compare different ethnicities then and now. You had Jonas Salk compared to Anthony Weiner. Did you hear that one? I'd rather talk about the weather. Let me tell you what to expect in the next few days, because I'm on the West Coast, and I think I'm on the furthest promontory of the West Coast of the continental United States here in the Bay Area, or nearly. I know when I go to the edge of the Golden Gate Bridge and contemplate jumping, I'm joking. No, on the southern side. It's the farther, and you look at it, and you see the water. But you see, the weather we get here goes there. It runs west to east, okay? So we had a heat wave here that you shouldn't know from in the last few days. 102 in the inland, 103. People were dying. Everything stopped. It was like the day the earth stood still. So you're going to get a bit of a heat wave. But then all of a sudden, you wake up, the fog comes in. The pressure changes from low to high or high to low, and all of a sudden it goes from so hot to like fog blowing in, wind, the white caps, the bay is gorgeous, I'm happy again, because if it's over like a certain over a certain temperature, I melt. Mentally, I melt down. Right now, I'm happy again because it's windy, sunny, the exact kind of summer I love, the summer that most normal people hate. I'm always impressed with how people move to the San Francisco area from God knows where, and they come here thinking that it's Los Angeles or Mexico because it's California. They don't understand why it's windy and cold here. They don't know the first thing about what the city is all about. It's about wearing coats in the summer and hats and scarves. That's why we love it. Those of us who love the fog. So it's beautiful here. It's a happy day for me. There's such horrible news out there. I'm afraid to break your heart. You know that pharmacy killing? I can't get it out of my mind in New York. What is with these drugs? The guy goes in and breaks into a pharmacy, shoots the pharmacist and an 18-year-old kid who's working there to steal oxycodone for his fat, disgusting, junkie wife. Then bing, bing, the bell rings, and in walks a 71-year-old man for his prescription and another person there and shoots them dead. What in the world? Where's the respect for human life go in this country? How did this happen? Well, let's go back to your friends in Hollywood. The vermin of Hollywood did it. Let's go back to the vermin of Hollywood who should be arrested as far as I'm concerned. Yes, I am calling for a censorship board that oversees Hollywood. There's absolutely no control over the vermin of Hollywood. The degenerates and the junkies who make the movies that poison the minds of America need to be controlled by the United States government. We need a censorship board. Now, I know what you're going to say. Savage, would you like the government censoring you with some kind of controls? I am censored by some kind of controls. There are things I cannot say and things I will not say. There are not only external controls, but there are things within me that I would not say on the radio that I'm allowed to say, okay? Because I have what's known as discernment. I have education. I have a decent sense of what society should hear. You may not like my politics, but none of it is vulgar. Now let's go to Hollywood. Say, take a look at movies. Let's go back a little bit. Natural Born Killers put out by the psychopaths of Hollywood. Or every movie that Martin Scorsese did degenerated the culture by several degrees. Marty Scorsese. Oh, there's Marty. Hey, Marty, how are you? Oh, Marty deserves an Academy Award. Hey, Marty, how are you, Marty? Oh, there's Marty Scorsese. Look, he has glasses. He must be intellectual. Hey, Marty, how did you degenerate the culture today? Which movie have you done today, Marty, with Robert De Niro to make the American people even sicker and more depraved? Oh, the shootings on Long Island had nothing to do with it, Marty?
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Out to think of what the vermin and the drugs have done to this country. Now, here's a rock and roll song, Over the Mountain and Across the Sea by Johnny and Joe, and look what it's about. It's about love. It's about idealizing a woman, a girl. A man is in love with a woman. He has her up on a pedestal. She is a goddess to him. Now, compare it to the filth that the degenerates write and produce today. The more degenerate, the filthier, the more disgusting, the more misogynist, the faster they'll produce it. So you say, well, you've heard all of this before. You really haven't heard all of this before. Because the way I'm presenting it to you is a little different. Yes, you know that there's a cultural debasement. How we have gone, for example, from Jonas Salk to Anthony Weiner. Or from Pavarotti to the dirtbags on Jersey Shore. Or from Martin Luther King Jr. to the rappers of today. We understand that there's been a downgrade of the culture. We understand it. But what you don't quite understand is who did it and that many of them are still alive and they're still doing it. What you don't understand is that these criminals who are behind this degeneracy are actually alive and well and thriving. And what you further don't understand is that we need a censorship board in Hollywood to begin with. And that overt violence, degenerate sexuality, overt sexuality must all be banned from the movies in order to start to heal this nation. Now, you may say this is one man's opinion. You may say I'm from another generation and that I don't speak for the current generation. It doesn't matter what you say, because I know that I speak for tens and tens of millions of people who have had it not up to here, but up to there. And having introduced the show in that way again, I'm going to take a call and I'm going to do something, a special treat for you, because it's the summer. And after all, in the summer, people do have a different pace of life. When I heard a song like that, Over the Mountain Across the Sea, it leads me to, I want to hear Little Star by the Elegants. Play it for a minute, then I'll go to the next reverie in a minute. Look at Teddy on the cover of that book. Look at that face. You have a Little Star by the Elegants? This used to be one of my favorites. Country was a beautiful country. Women were revered. They were protected by men. They were sheltered by men. And with the woman's movement, has the woman now, is the woman in a better place than she was? Is she emotionally in a better place? Because of the psychopaths like Bella Abzug and the other so-called women's rights activists, is the role of woman better in America today? Is the woman revered as much as she was in times past? Years ago, I wrote a book called Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories, and many of you bought it. It was self-published. It did very well. And I actually was laying in bed in Los Angeles over the weekend, and I was thinking about redoing this book in a paperback and eliminating all the political stuff in the back and reorganizing the story so that the lead story is Dead Man's Pants, and the book would be called Dead Man's Pants, Savage Radio Stories by Michael Savage, and not Psychological Nudity, because Psychological Nudity, although it's a call word, a catchphrase from my show, doesn't really translate to the average person. They don't understand it. It's too, you know, esoteric. It was a fine book, but I may redo it on the Dead Man's Pants. And I'm going to read for you Dead Man's Pants, because of all the people I run into once in a while, they say, you know, I loved your childhood stories, and the most interesting one to me was Dead Man's Pants. So now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, and without any ADD, Dead Man's Pants. Growing up in the Bronx as I did, the man child in the promised land, I didn't have many of the luxuries most kids with their hats on back would take for granted today. My father was an immigrant. He worked his fingers to the bone. We simply didn't have the money to afford more than the basics. So as you might expect, I cherished and took care of the things I had. As a kid, I'd line up my shoes under my bed at night, neat, like in the military. I made sure they were polished, too. I'm sure some shrink today would say I suffered from ADD or other compulsive behavior disorders and should have been put on a regimen of drugs. I wonder what they'd say about the fact that through most of my youth I wore secondhand pants from Dead Men. Many of the pants I wore as a preteen came off of stiffs cut down to fit me. Now, don't get me wrong. My father was a good man. He ran a small antique store with mostly 19th century stuff. On the side, at least in the beginning, he sold used goods as well. A man's got to do what a man's got to do to make ends meet, right? Occasionally, he would go to an auction after a man died and buy the entire estate. The clocks, the dishes, the mirrors, whatever the man had. The pants, the shirts, the whole deal. You get the picture? Back at the store, as he sorted the stuff for resale, he'd take a closer look at the suit. Once he got a hot shafter and mark suit from a dead man. Now, what's he going to do? Toss it in the garbage like they do today? In those days, it wasn't in him to throw out a good worsted fabric. Instead, he brought home the pants to me. I remember my father called me to the bedroom and showed them to me like the head tailor at Nordstrom's department store. He'd say, "Now, Michael, get a good look at the fabric." I wanted to vomit. I got a migraine because I knew what was coming. "Take a look at the quality of this fabric." He's working me like a salesman. He's unrolling the pants on the bed. I can see it to this day. He unrolls it like he's selling me a bolt of hand-woven cloth. He would say, you can't get fabric like this anywhere. I wanted to say, of course not, Dad. They only sell stuff like that for men who died. You know, it was like special clothing for the Undertaker. Even if I had said something, that wouldn't have changed one thing. He'd go downtown and the pants would come back fit for me. You know, shortened without the legs taken in properly. I'm sorry. They ended up baggy like an Abbott and Costello pair of pants. I'm sorry. They ended up baggy like an Abbott and Costello pair of pants. Even if they had fit me properly, there was something repugnant about the whole idea. Like I said, I knew how to make do with whatever was at hand. There's an old saying, the man with no shoes complains until he meets the man with no feet. The fact that I didn't have much more than a place to sleep in my first little apartment after college was okay with me. At least I wasn't wearing dead man's pants. Little did I know that one day those awful pants would serve as a metaphor for the shift in my political orientation. You might find it interesting that I wasn't always an independent conservative. I was raised a Democrat, blue-collar home. My dad was a Democrat. My mom was a Democrat. Most of my relatives still vote Democrat. To an immigrant family whose parents came of age during the Great Depression, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the great white savior. Aside from being the only U.S. president reelected to office three times, he gained lasting political mileage with the relief that his New Deal offered. As you might expect then, my father used to tell me, Michael, all I know is the Democrats are for the little guy and the Republicans are for big business. In a way, his attempt to sell me on the political leanings of the Democrat Party was no different than his sales job with the dead man's pants. He was selling me a failed ideology that should have been buried long ago. So as a young man, not seeing things as clearly as I do now, I voted as my dad did, since I didn't understand politics. But as I grew older, that view would change completely. The turning point in my thinking can be traced back to my first job out of college as a social worker in the Upper West Side of New York. All of my so-called clients were minorities. Now, I was a good liberal at the time, having had my brain washed at one of the city universities in New York by a whole slew of European immigrants who, instead of kissing the ground when they got here, urinated on the sacred soil and the flag and immediately sought to instill communist philosophy in the minds of the young, myself included. I didn't know that at the time. I was just a wide-eyed liberal kid with an eye on changing the world. There I was, fresh out of Queens College. Having minored in sociology, I figured I'd take a job as a social worker to save the, quote, oppressed minority. I was always an idealist. I still am, as a matter of fact. But the abuses of the welfare system that I saw back then nauseated me and started me on my slow road to recovery. Day after day, I found person after person who was working, who had a job, but who claimed they didn't so they could get their government handout. Worse, they knew they were ripping off the welfare system and didn't bat an eye. How could I be so sure these hucksters weren't swindling Uncle Sam? I mean, you could argue that they were oppressed and didn't know the rules. Not me. At a young age, I learned a valuable lesson on how to spot people who smiled to your face while robbing you blind the second your back was turned. The next story about Sam the Butcher is a perfect example. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be back with Sam the Butcher. Savage. You got a president who doesn't belong in the White House, who's completely over his head, who is using every failed technique that was tried in Eastern Germany in the 1950s, the wife gallivanting in South Africa, and the president of South Africa refuses to meet Michelle, but you won't read that in the paper tomorrow because she's not qualified to meet the president of South Africa to begin with, but he snubs her. He sends his jails chief to see her. You hear this? She's burning up money faster than the jet fuel, traveling with an entourage of 400. She has 40 personal assistants when previous first ladies had one or two personal assistants, and she gets away with it for reasons you can pretty well figure out yourself. Then this thing in New York thing. I mean, the Long Island drugstore killings is a minor story in one way, but it's symbolic of everything wrong with the country today. Drug addict, wife who is a drug addict, goes in a pharmacy to get oxycodone, and he shoots the pharmacist, and he shoots an 18-year-old girl who was filling in for her sister who was supposed to work. Now, the sister who wasn't there is never going to be sane after this. Two customers come in, and he kills a 71-year-old and a 30-something-year-old, shoots them dead with his 45. And what did the vermin at the New York Post lead the story with? Army veteran. Larry Salonis, Salim Algar, and Clemente Lisi of the New York Post says, following a three-day man on an unemployed Army veteran. See, again, Army, anything they can do to smear the military or the Army. So don't assume the New York Post is conservative. It's run by the News Corporation. The whole culture is just completely out of whack. It's like an earth, the earth tilted on its axis, okay? The earth has tilted on its axis. The earth of our morality, the earth of our ethics, the earth of our national identity has been moved off its axis. How it can ever be reset, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. I have some ideas. I want to play for you something in a minute. I showed you how we've gone from men like Jonas Salk to Anthony Weiner, and comparing a Jewish to a Jew. We compared a Martin Luther King Jr. to a rapper. We compared Edward R. Murrow to a man who says he got a chill up his leg on MSNBC while listening to Obama, a softball. And you look at Jonas Salk, born in 1914, died in 1995. He was an American medical researcher. You may not, I'm going to tell you something you may not know about him. He was the first, he discovered and developed the first safe and effective polio vaccine, right? Now, I lived through the fear of the early 50s when polio was an epidemic and everyone was afraid to go in swimming pools and they didn't know where the virus came from. It was a national nightmare in this country. And until 1955, when the Salk vaccine was introduced, polio was the most frightening public health problem of the post-war United States. And when news of the vaccine success was made public on April 12, 1955, Salk was hailed as a miracle worker. The day almost became a national holiday. It frankly should be instead of Cesar Chavez Day. Oh, but we'll put that aside for a minute. Instead of a vegetable picker, it should have been Jonas Salk Day. But Salk's sole focus had been to develop a safe and effective vaccine as quickly as possible. No interest in personal profit. Listen to the tail of the end of the story. When he was asked in a televised interview who owned the patent to the polio vaccine, you know what Jonas Salk said? Quote, there is no patent. Could you patent the sun? Now, compare Jonas Salk to the current crop of biomedical researchers and doctors who are doing research today anywhere in the world. There are none left. It's a product of the time as well. Greed. Greed rules. Greed rules. So let's play Jonas Salk. Listen to this man.
Well, I'm sure that just as we look back into the past, to those who've preceded us, we recognize that some of those who've gone before have been wiser than others. And the question that I have been asking in recent years, amongst others, is, are we being good ancestors? And I pose that question because I believe that the future generations will look back upon us and judge us as to whether we have been wise or whether we have been profligate and wasteful and destructive of the opportunities for their future.
Can you believe the choice of words, the dignity of this man's single couple of paragraphs there, maybe one paragraph? Incredible role model. When I was a boy, I was told to look up to Jonas Salk and men like him. And then we come to a time in American history where the next prominent Jew is Bernie Madoff. And worse yet, Anthony Weiner. Listen to where we've gone. Listen to him now.
We see it in the United States Senate every single day where members say, we want amendments, we want debate, we want amendment, but we're still a no. And then we stand up and say, oh, if only we had a different process, we'd vote yes. You vote yes if you believe yes. You vote in favor of something if you believe it's the right thing. If you believe it's the wrong thing, you vote no. We are following a procedure. I will not yield to the gentleman, and the gentleman will observe regular order. The gentleman will observe regular order.
Now, how do you explain how the Jewish people have degenerated from a Jonas Salk to an Anthony Weiner? How do you explain how the Italian-American has gone from Luciano Pavarotti to the Jersey Shore or Mob Wives? How do you explain it? I would say that the blame could be 360 degrees. It's a 360-degree blame circle. I mean, you wind up shooting yourself in that circle. You know, let he who is not, who you know, cast the first stone and all of that. But the question is, how do we pick up the pieces? Where do we go from here? How do we get back to a Jonas Salk? How do we tell our children we're sorry for what we have done to this planet? In terms, I don't mean the Al Gore view. I mean in terms of the social and moral degeneracy that they have grown up with. How do we say we're sorry for men like Anthony Weiner? We're sorry for what the vermin in the media have produced. How do we say that to them?
Savage.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while, you belong to me.
Joe Stafford, You Belong to Me used to be one of my father's favorite songs. But the question is, how did music go from that to what we have today? Do I have to play another one for you? Play clip 10, Amy Winehouse, Rehab. Here?
No, no, no.
You hear?
Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no,
Sewer Rat.
I'm going to rehab. No, no, no. I'm so cool. I stick a spike in my arm. Yes, yes, yes. I just had the tattoos up and down my spine. Yes, yes, yes. I'm just so cool. I look like a living snake and a rat combined. I'm so cool. I'm going into rehab. Yes, yes, yes.
Don't get me started. Then you got MSNBC, Chris Matthews, feeling a thrill go up his leg when the imposter speaks. Listen to this degenerate. Listen to clip 12.
I have to tell you, you know, it's part of reporting this case, this election. The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech. I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
Steady.
He feels a thrill going up his leg. And Phil Griffin keeps him on the air, a man who should be in an Alzheimer's ward, in my opinion. Matthews is ready for the curtain. The last curtain call in the chair sitting in the corner facing the brocaded curtain alone. But instead he's on NBC, that's all. That's a broadcaster today compared to Edward R. Murrow. Remember Edward R. Murrow? I mean, forget his politics, whether you like them or not is irrelevant. Let's play just an example to go from that to a blast from the past. You can compare him to, clip 11.
We must remember always that accusation is not proof and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine and remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to speak, to associate, and to defend causes that were for the moment unpopular. Good night and good luck.
1908 to 1965, American broadcast journalist. Not only a great voice, but he had wisdom that he portrayed in his broadcasts. Now take a look at what we have now. Glenn Beck with Blackboards. Chris Matthews. It's under the Amy Winehouse of the news. Let me give you another example that we put together for you today for your listening displeasure. I'm going to do one more right now because it's so good. You hear, Latino oppressed, the Hispanics oppressed, they're oppressed, racism, idiot morons, you. Way back when, there was a physicist named Luis Alvarez, born in 1911, an experimental physicist and inventor, University of California at Berkeley. The American Journal of Physics commented that Alvarez was one of the most brilliant and productive experimental physicists of the 20th century. And he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1968, and he received over 40 patents, some of which proved commercially viable. Somehow he didn't need affirmative action. Somehow he didn't need government help. Somehow he didn't need liars in Congress saying that the Hispanics were oppressed. Now compare Alvarez, Luis Alvarez, Hispanic, to Representative Gutierrez. Listen to this one now.
Well, this is an interesting example of...
Compare Gutierrez, scientist Luis Alvarez, to Representative Gutierrez. Don't you have Gutierrez? Or you
in
hit the
same manner as we have stood up when the rule of law said to a woman, you will not earn equal pay. When someone... we say that will not be tolerated. When there is someone without health care, we say we will provide health care. We look at the rule of law and we see homeless and we...
Oh, shut up. I can't take it anymore. Do you hear the difference? Now do you understand my exasperation? I grew up in a time when, compared to today, it was like a classical music. And it was only popular culture that I'm talking about. It was like classical music compared to this today. So here I am. I have an opportunity to raise the bar. Do I always do it? Absolutely not. Do I occasionally do it? Yes. Does the audience appreciate it? No. They'd rather I lower the bar. They'd rather I give them more Basuda than Mario Lanza. They'd rather have more Basuda than Lanza. They'd rather have lasagna rather than Lanza. What else do we have? Muslim woman escapes jail sentence in Australia over burqa controversy. This you're not going to believe. Listen to clip 24. Look at the bending over backwards for Muslims. Listen to this now.
Woman ordered to spend 6 months in jail for making a false complaint against a Sydney policeman has had her conviction overturned. Despite the court win, supporters of Carnita Matthews scuffled with the media and police outside.
Uh-huh. In other words, the Muslims, while she was being given the sentence, the Muslims pretended to be peaceful. They didn't know, they were quiet. The minute she was vindicated, even though she had accused the cop, falsely accused him of racism, and said that he falsely said that he tried to rip the burqa off her during a traffic stop. The police cameras showed she lied. The stupid judge said she was not guilty. The minute they said that, the Muslims went wild in the courtroom and started fighting with everybody. Listen to clip 25.
Victory in the court turned into conflict on the streets until the large police presence on hand intervened. In the middle, shielded from view, Carnita Matthews.
They're obviously happy about the result, and they're expressing it in a way that's culturally appropriate to them.
Did you hear what a dirtbag attorney said? The Muslims who are attacking people in the streets are expressing their view in a way that is culturally appropriate. So don't just blame them, blame the lawyers as well. Makes a false claim against the highway patrol officer, accusing him of trying to lift up her veil. You hear this? Who would want to look at that disgusting vermin underneath the veil? Turns out she was lying. And then she goes to court and the judge agrees with her. And the Muslims go wild in the streets. It's astounding. Just astounding. She makes a complaint against the cop where there's no evidence whatsoever. And the judge says, oh, that's fine. And her lawyer says, the riots you're seeing is a culturally appropriate manner for Muslims to express themselves. So how do you come back from a time like this? And I don't mean Michelle Bachmann. She's not right enough for me. She may be right on, but she ain't right enough for Michael. Only a Michelle Bachmann as vice president could save America. Only a real right winger can straighten this country out and clean out the sewer pipe that runs from Hollywood and the sewer pipe that runs from New York City's newsrooms. And only when we clean out the sewer pipes of Hollywood and the sewer pipes of the newsrooms that have poisoned the mind of America, distorted the body politics, so we wind up with two frauds like the Obamas in the White House, only then can we save this country. Now, who is this mystery man on the white horse? I don't know. It's not me. Now, Michelle Obama, of course, is enjoying herself in South Africa, having a wonderful time. 400 entourage, 40 personal staff, 40 personal assistants. You believe this? How could any black person in this country approve of this? How could you approve of a first lady abusing the White House, the position of first lady like this? How could you approve of this? I don't know how a black person who has a brain in their head cannot see who these people are, the complete frauds that they are. Forget that they're liberals. I don't like their politics. But the abuse of power is beyond belief. Not a word. Not even a report in the media that she travels with 40 personal assistants, an entourage of 400. Then when she went to Spain, she booked 500 rooms for half of Chicago that she took with her. What is she doing in South Africa? Even the president, Jacob Zuma, wouldn't meet her. Jacob Zuma snubs Michelle Obama during First Lady's South Africa visit. It's on michaelsavage.com. You won't see it anywhere else. I didn't write the story. It came out of the telegraph.co.uk. Why? Well, there happens to be a problem between South Africa and the United States. Because last week, President Jacob Zuma issued a sharp, appeal to Hillary Clinton over Libya. He doesn't like the idea that we're bombing Libya into the Stone Age. He doesn't like it at all. And Hillary Clinton, being a warmonger, along with Susan Rice and the few other women who have unleash this war upon the Libyan people. And don't now accuse me of supporting Gaddafi. I'm not a fan of a fascist of any kind. However, Gaddafi is a known quantity, while the so-called rebels are of the same ilk as the rebels in Egypt who I warned you about when Anderson Cooper was all excited with a thrill running up his leg over the excitement that he had in the streets of Cairo. And I warned you what was coming in Egypt. I was 100% right, and I'm 100% right about what's coming in Libya. And how do you understand anything in this country when you have a sellout loser like John McCain, who I've named John McShame, saluting Obama along with John Kerry? Can you believe this odd couple saying that they're going to basically kosher Obama's illegal war in Libya? It's astounding to me how McPain could be so incredibly wrong on so many important issues and get reelected as he did. So let me mellow it out a little bit, because I know you're waiting for the speech from the anointed one, from the imposter. Speech will be coming up shortly across America. His wife's away, and he's going to give up a speech now about taking troops out of Afghanistan to appease Code Pinko and the other left-wing fanatics in the United States of America. But in this case, frankly, I don't think we should be in Afghanistan. I've said so for over 2 years now. I mean, it's nothing new to me. Just that I don't like the way he's going to do it. There's going to be mayhem like you can't believe when they pull the troops out of Afghanistan. And then what are you going to tell to the widows and the orphans who are left behind because their husbands or their sons were killed in Afghanistan for no reason whatsoever? It's bad enough you die or get maimed in a war. But in a war that you're fighting to preserve the national security of a nation is one thing. But a war where there's no known reason to be there, no one even knows what we're doing there. Even the generals can't define the mission for the troops. It's another story. Let's go to the callers. I've talked enough. Dave in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi. The reason I'm calling is regarding what your discussion about Jonas Salk before. And it's funny you should bring up the subject of Jonas Salk, because he was such an important historical figure in medicine and what he did for the country and the world.
Right.
But
right.
the same day that he died, Jerry Garcia died. And the next day, the New York Times put Jonas Salk's obituary on page 24, and Jerry Garcia was on page 1.
Now, what does that tell you about Pinchy Sulzberger, who destroyed an institution he inherited from his father? What does that tell you about the imbalance of the lunatics who run the New York Times? You think it's overnight it happened? The grandfather, Adolf Och Sulzberger, creates a newspaper that becomes great. His son makes it into something greater, and then they give it to this loser who turns it into a rag.
Absolutely a rag. Actually, we call it the Communist Manifesto here.
It's awful. It's just beyond comprehension how anybody reads it anymore.
Yeah. Anyway,
high on cocaine. You got that song? High on cocaine.
Driving that train.
High on cocaine. Oh, how cool.
Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead. Trouble behind. And know that notion just cost.
Get out of here, you filthy junkie, you cultural icon. I'm sick of them all. I'm sick of them all. I'm sick of the people who control the culture. I hate them all. I hate them with a passion. Not dislike. I'm using a word that's biblically correct. I hate them for what they have done, and I hate them for what they are doing to this country. You turn on HBO, you turn on Showtime, and you see one degenerate after another that they call a comedian doing a show, a live show, debasing everything that's decent about America. And you never, ever see a talented conservative, even a talented moderate, on any of these outlets. Never, never. There is a new blacklist that comes out of the entertainment medium. And unless you conform to the protocols of their agenda, you are not heard from. You don't work in their town. That's why I say we need fairness and we need balance. We need a censorship board to control the vermin of Hollywood and the vermin in the newsrooms of New York City. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of love. Tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the answer.
Yeah, the Book of Love to the Book of Junkies. Unbelievable. So the imposter is going to give a speech in a few minutes. I don't have the TV on. I'm sure they have a countdown in order to make certain that Softball has a thrill running up his other leg. They got the clock ticking. Wolf Blitzer made sure he had an extra pastrami sandwich on rye today. So he's good and ready for the great speech that they can immediately say was one of the greatest speeches in the history of the presidency. Then they can bring out the plagiarist, the presidential historian plagiarist Goodwin, whatever her name is. That skinny hag that they always dig up from a university, who always says Bill Clinton was the greatest president, FDR was number two, and Obama was number one. She'll come out and say one of the finest, most incredibly stirring speeches ever written. The man will go down in history as a phenomenal leader. That's coming in a few minutes. So here we are, Stan. All right, let's take the callers here. Wisconsin Jacob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm calling to let you know that there are some young people out there that don't have their heads up their you-know-where. I'm almost 22 years old, just got married this past weekend, and I am absolutely appalled at this administration.
Well, it's not just about the administration. I mean, I've tried to focus on something other than Obama today, which is the culture at large. I mean, you have to, you understand what I was doing today.
Yes. And
all right. Well, I'm glad you're young and maybe there's hope yet. New York, WOR, Joe, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I want to talk about two great ethnic groups that have contributed tremendously to this country, but their people, the people of the Italian-Americans, Italians and Jews, have been defamed by Hollywood. And this started happening about 40 years ago. This is a tremendous defamation. And unfortunately, sometimes it's their own people, like Scorsese and Woody Allen, have exploited the good name and have changed.
That's right.
And redefined
Woody it. Allen was the beginning of the downfall of the image of the Jewish male in America. He took the weakest imagery of the schlemiel, and I've said it before, Woody Allen was the equivalent of Step and Fetch It for the black people. You know the reference, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And
right. Vile. In other words, in the 30s, there was a black man who played Step and Fetch It, and whites rolled with laughter as Step and Fetch It humiliated himself in front of white actors to make himself look the way white people wanted to believe black men should be. The same with Woody Allen. Woody Allen is no great cultural icon. He's a disgrace. He's a disgrace to the Jewish people. But because of men like Woody Allen and now Larry David, who's a continuance, you wind up with a guy like Anthony Weiner.
Exactly. And for the Italian people, Scorsese and Coppola in the early 70s, they redefined the great people like Perry Como. These are classy people. Marconi.
That's right. Dean Martin, Perry Como. And now look what we have.
We have now.
No, I wouldn't give Coppola a pass. Everyone gives him a big pass. The man degenerated the culture with The God. As great as that movie was, when you actually look at it, what did it do for the Italian people? Did it raise them up or did it lower them?
No, it was absolutely low because it was a good art form, but under the smokescreen of that art form, it redefined. And you said it before that an Italian like a Giuliani does not play west of the Hudson, and that's absolutely true. Even for the Jewish people, we don't play west of the Hudson, and people think of us in terms.
Yes, but today it's going on today. Look, you have Mob Wives, you have Jersey Shore. Take a look at those role models they're putting out there.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Defamation. It's absolutely defamation.
Well, I don't know about defamation. It's a degradation, I would say. And I would say the degradation of the Jews and the Italians and the blacks and the Hispanics is unending. Unending by the vermin in the media. 1-800-449-8255. Frank in Boston. Oh, God, we don't even have time for Frank on WRKO. I'd love to have you on. We just are burning out of time. If you missed the opening of today's show, you missed something more important than the president's speech. Because we did something never done in the history of radio. That is never going to be done again unless I play it again, where we go from dignity to depravity, comparing Pavarotti to Jersey Shore, Jonas Salk to Anthony Weiner, Martin Luther King Jr. to Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, Dylan Thomas to Amy Winehouse.
Savage.
Wow.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of course, the big news tonight is that the anointed one, Barack, ashamed Obama, or shall I say, Barack, you should be ashamed Obama, is announcing a troop withdrawal from Afghanistan 2 years after he became president. I mean, I'm on record saying I'm in favor of leaving Afghanistan because I don't know what the mission is, frankly. Another big story that you're not going to read about is that the job situation is much worse than it looks. Morton B. Zuckerman from U.S. News wrote, "We now have more idle men and women than at any time since the Great Depression." Did you hear that? The Great Recession has now earned the dubious right of being compared to the Great Depression. In the face of the most stimulative fiscal and monetary policies in our history, that's Obama's solution. Remember the stimulus funds that Nancy Pelosi dispersed amongst her friends? We have experienced the loss of over 7 million jobs, wiping out every job gained since the year 2000. Half the new jobs created are in temporary help agencies as firms resist hiring full-time workers. You hear any of this? 16% is the real unemployment rate. It includes 8.5 million part-timers who want to work full-time, which is double the historical norm, and those who have applied for a job within the last 6 months, including many of the long-term unemployed. And moreover, the 16% does not even take into account the discouraged workers who have left the labor force. 10 years ago, 5 million people were collecting federal disability payments. Now 8 million are on the rolls at a cost to taxpayers of $120 billion a year. That's for federal disability. What else about the job situation? It gets worse and worse and worse. Since home equity has long been the largest asset on the balance sheet of the average American family, all homeowners are suffering from housing prices that have, on average, declined 33%. Now, compare that to the Great Depression drop of only 31%. We may well be in the midst of a modern depression. Well, my answer is, duh. You elect a Marxist, and what did you expect? An economic miracle from a Marxist? It's failed everywhere on earth except in the academia, the halls of academia. Also something you won't read on your in your local paper is Michelle Obama's visit to South Africa. She was snubbed by the president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma. He only sent his prisons minister to meet her at the airport. He will not see her during a 3-day stay. Did you believe this? You didn't read about that, huh? He snubbed her. He snubbed her. Now, you got to look at some of the commentary when you read an article like this. You know, let's look at some of the things people are saying about Michelle being snubbed by the president of South Africa. Now, one thing I will say is we surely can't blame this on racism, although maybe she can claim it's racism, even though, you know. Steve writes, "How dare they not bow down to Michelle and the kids? I think that is great. Even their native land, they want nothing to do with this bunch." How do you like that? "Poor Michelle," someone else writes. "No invitation to the royal wedding and now being rejected by Zuma. Just shows how unpopular she and her hubby are." "I'm happy," snubbed her, writes Larry. "I suppose we paid all the costs of this trip. Really a vacation for her and her family, who have zero official business to conduct for the still great United States of America." Kanakava writes, "This was not an official visit by a U.S. president or a member of Congress. She is the wife of the president and as such has no official business because she does not represent the people of this country." Well, whatever, you get the point. A lot of people don't like her. Of course, you got to remember that the president of South Africa is a communist. And the bottom line here is that Nelson Mandela is also a communist. Jacob Zuma was a communist. And many people think he still is. And someone writes that Michelle is only an anarchist and a nihilist. Communists only have use for them on the front lines in big cities in Europe, in the United States, and in Vancouver. It's a story you won't read anywhere else. It's on michaelsavage.com. It's important because Michelle Obama has been snubbed by the president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma. What else is in the news? Let's go to michaelsavage.com. Question number one is Hugo Chavez dying. He hasn't returned to the public eye after surgery in Cuba. Pakistan courts China. Marxist president destroyed jobs. Good article. Democrat faces ethics probe for sexual harassment charge. Cops arrest suspect in Long Island drugstore killings. Here's a big one. NASA scientist accused of profiting from global warming. Hansen. He had a rogue operation going there. From the New York Post, the gang that couldn't sting straight is about General Eric Holder. Did you see the one about the drag queen flying? It's an interesting story. A man who was wearing little but women's undergarments was allowed to fly, but a rapper whose pants were below his behind was taken off the plane, resisted arrest, and was arrested. My headline, drag queen flies, rapper fries. Poll, only 3 in 10 should have voted for Obama. China wants to build self-sustaining city near Boise. I told you that yesterday. You got to read it. How liberalism destroyed the white race. Don't miss that one. It's really good. Kerry and McPain want to authorize Obama's illegal Libya war. If you go to the bottom of michaelsavage.com, old mafia file going on New York City auction block. That's interesting. Egypt strangles Christian church construction. Hey, Christians, your friends in Egypt are being prohibited from building churches by Byzantine regulations. The currency is in free fall. The economy is in a disastrous state. Gasoline's $5 a gallon and heading higher. The war in Afghanistan is being lost because of lack of willpower on the part of the leaders. There's no leadership. There's no commander in chief. He's invisible. When has he last given a speech to the troops? Go out and kill the enemy. Go out and mop up the floor with those bastards, those throwbacks. He hasn't said that. Which side is he on? He was reluctantly dragged into the Afghan war, so therefore the boys don't know what to do over there. They know if they actually do their job, they're going to get court-martialed. So where does all this come from? It comes from his political orientation. As I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty, I'm going to read you one or two paragraphs. I'm going to go back now to something you need to know, which is his time at Occidental College. You must know this. And here's what I wrote. Just as Karl Marx aligned himself with a wealthy patron who picked up the tab for his lifestyle, Obama did the same thing while a student pursuing his Marxist ideologies at Occidental College. In a moment, I'll explain why this is noteworthy. Let's begin with Obama's choice of a roommate. Mohammed Hassan Chandu, a wealthy Pakistani student. John Drew, Obama's contemporary at Oxy, wrote this. He wrote, when Barack Obama was a young man at Occidental College his sophomore year, he had a very wealthy patron in Hassan Chandu. They had a wonderful big house where they threw lavish parties. Chandu was throwing the money around. Obama was dressed in the nicest, slickest clothes. I thought they were both wealthy. Dr. Drew recalls going out to dinner with Obama and his roommate, Chandu, in Chandu's BMW, while arguing for hours about the merits of Marxism and Leninism over drinks and cigarettes. And then he says, Obama was arguing a straightforward Marxist-Leninist class struggle point of view, which anticipated that there would be a revolution of the working class led by revolutionaries who would overthrow the capitalist system and institute a new socialist government that would redistribute the wealth, close quote. Then I write, do you see the irony? On one hand, Barack Obama, a student who comes from a broken home and with no visible means of support, was living high on the hog, compliments of his rich roommate. On the other hand, Obama was arguing about the merits of redistributing the wealth to end class struggle. Doesn't that strike you as bizarre, if not downright hypocritical? He and Marx had a lot in common. Both suffered from a severe case of class envy, coupled with an entitlement mentality. Each wanted the good life, neither wanted to work for it. Both were happy to sponge off someone else. And so it should come as no surprise that when Obama's patron saint pulled out of town, that was his cue to move on to greener pastures to find another sugar daddy. Here's how Dr. Drew saw it. Quote, when Obama knew that Chandu was going to leave Occidental College, he knew that the money supply was gone. The big house was gone. The parties were done. And he thought it was better for him to get the heck out of there and go to Colombia because Chandu wasn't financing his lifestyle anymore. I don't believe Obama was ever able to create that same charismatic presence on the Colombia campus. Now, I spend a few other pages on pages 78, 74, 5, 6 on Obama at at the College Occidental and then at Columbia. And it's all about his love affair with communism, Marxism, and what Obama wants to do to America and what, frankly, he would be doing had he not been derailed by the Tea Party movement and the elections of November. If you don't think you've had an effect, you're wrong. By mere dint of the fact that the radical left, the scum, the union vermin, are now attacking Republicans at town hall meetings is the fact that they're going to do what the classic what communists have done through the ages and in every other country. They're going to get thuggish. They're going to try to shout us down. They're going to try and shout down anyone who stands for the free market. And that is why I'm calling upon you to do what those young Cuban Americans did back in 2000 when they scared the heck out of those cowardly lawyers from NYU and Columbia and Harvard who went down to rig the election for Al Gore. Do you remember that picture? I'll never forget it. Of the Cuban Americans with the white shirts in Florida banging on the glass walls where the ballots were being counted. They scared the boys with the big glasses, and they did their job correctly rather than their jury rig it. And that's what you need to do. You've got to fight fire with fire. You cannot sit back and listen to the radio. You're going to have to start going to the town hall meetings again. You're going to have to start organizing again. You're going to have to get in the faces of these thugs, and you're going to have to do it to save this country because they're on a road to destroy the free market and to destroy everything that we stand for. Now, I just want to put one caveat in this. When I say free market, I'm not talking about a crony capitalism of the type that Obama is supporting. My surmisal, my guess, the hedge fund manipulators, the pirates of Wall Street, those who are out of control with power and with greed, who must be stopped by reintroducing the uptick rule. Again, you want to know what the uptick rule is? I spent over a year researching and writing Trickle Up Poverty. I'm not here to sell you a book. I'm here to sell you an outline of what you need to understand in order to intelligently fight this communist who is in the White House. Do you understand that? This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
How many times I've used the phrase red diaper dopa baby to explain the problem that America is having today because of so many communist children who went on to using marijuana that they became totally psychotic. And I wasn't doing it in jest. I used the phrase RDDBs for years. I stopped using it. I think I should start referring to it again. I believe what we're seeing in America today, particularly in the Democrat Party, is the ascent of the RDDBs. Here's a study just came out, published in a major journal, which confirms what I've been saying to you for over 15 years. Cannabis doubles risk of psychotic episodes. Using cannabis in one's youth almost doubles the risk of having psychotic episodes like paranoia and hallucinations, a study has found. A team of international researchers followed the lives of almost 2,000 young Germans who began with no history of psychosis for more than a decade. They discovered that youngsters who started smoking the drug at college age were 90% more likely to have psychotic symptoms in their mid-20s. It's an amazing story, and I've told you this over and over and over again. The scientists believe that exposure to THC, the main psychoactive component in cannabis, makes the brain more susceptible to psychotic episodes. And now what's amazing is that we've known this for years in science, but cannabis is now being pushed as though it's mother's milk. Cannabis clubs? Pot clubs, medical marijuana, it's all a giant conspiracy to completely make the dumb even dumber. Why do you think it's called dope dope? Hey, dope, why do you think they call it dope dope? You think it makes you smarter? You think it makes you think better? Makes you more competitive? It makes you more easily manipulated, dope. This study adds a further brick to the wall of evidence showing that use of traditional cannabis is a contributory cause of psychosis like schizophrenia, said Sir Robin Murray, professor of psychiatric research at King's College London. And yet, pot clubs abound. America is flowing in the lies and the propaganda of marijuana. And I'm sorry to tell you who was behind it because you're not going to want to hear it. Because I had an argument with one of his henchmen 7 or 8 years ago. George Soros has been pushing the legalization of marijuana for well over 10 years through his, I think, Open Society Institute or something to that effect. I believe Soros is one of the most demonically evil men in the history of the world. That's my personal opinion. Wherever you see something evil and wrong going on, you can see one of his front groups behind it. Media Matters, funded by Soros, attacked me, falsely accused me, took my comments out of context, and got me banned in Britain. Open Society, or whatever society, has been pushing the legalization of marijuana, first in Arizona, then in California. I had an argument with one of them on the telephone years ago. Again, George Soros. We know that marijuana is highly dangerous. And yet the young people don't know this. They think that it's just something like a beer. It isn't like a beer. It is not like a beer at all. It's extremely dangerous. Try to tell your children that if they don't believe you, the marijuana smoke itself has more carcinogens in it than tobacco smoke does. Are you aware of that? Again, you don't want to understand this. Oh, it's green. It's something natural. Curare is natural also. I can name 10 natural substances that can kill you. What does natural have to do with it? You think because it's natural, it's healthy? If it's natural, it can kill you as well. There are a lot of potent compounds in nature that are toxic. Marijuana is a toxic compound, extremely toxic. It explains to a great extent why the left wing is pushing medical marijuana, because it makes the people putty in their hands. Putty, if they're doped up on marijuana, if they're doped up on skunk, they can manipulate them like nutty putty. Cannabis is a risk factor for psychosis and recommends a cautious and thoughtful approach to cannabis legislation coming out of England, of all places. Cannabis doubles risk of psychotic episodes. Major study. I don't think you'll be hearing much about it because the marijuana lobby right now in America is overwhelmingly powerful. I've told you before I smoked marijuana in college like everyone I knew did, except for the few nerdy kids, God bless them, they were smart enough to avoid it. I hated marijuana, what it did to me. I hated it, but I did it because it was part of the initiation rite of the crowd I was with, and also because everybody smoked it, and you're considered a schmuck if you didn't. And you know, every time I smoked it, I had a paranoid reaction. My palms would sweat. I'd have a sense of reality would change. I hated this stuff. You don't want to tamper with drugs if you got a harpsichord for a brain. And I want you to tell your children that. Savage. Robert Scott Bell is a health expert, and he's going to talk about how our government is once again trying to keep natural cures away from the people. Robert Bell, welcome to the Savage Nation. This is a topic right up my alley.
Hey, Michael. It's good to be back with you in the Savage Nation, especially bringing a message of health freedom and liberty where it's most needed out there with the people, because we've got a disastrous situation where the government is now attacking those people who actually know how to bring healing, you know, whether they be medical doctors or not, via natural methods. You probably covered some of these stories, including the attack on Amish farmers. For goodness sake, what was their crime? Selling raw milk to those who wanted it. And, of course, there are many farmers out there that, you know, grow perfectly good food that could be used as medicine just like it has been for thousands of years. And yet they're attacked simply for acknowledging science related to what their food does. A great example of this is, you know, gout, of course, not a very fun issue to have. An inflammation could be in the toe, but it could be elsewhere. It's in the arthritic family. We talk about metabolic waste not being cleared from the system fast enough. It's not very hard to understand. I can get a sixth grader or even a fourth grader to understand that. Let's say if you're sedentary and you eat far too much animal protein for your needs, you have a lot of excess waste product produced in the digestion of that animal protein. And one of those things is uric acid. Now, if the liver can't process the uric acid appropriately, it's going to accumulate somewhere in the body. And I'll hazard a guess that loads of Savage Nation listeners may have from time to time have had arthritic pain, maybe even gout. And it could be as simple as a metabolic waste not clearing the liver. So it just so happens that our humble and lovable cherry farmers know this, that cherries and cherry juice concentrates can help alleviate the inflammation of gout and a lot of arthritic diseases.
I've talked about this before on my show. I've written Healing Children Naturally, but why don't more people know about using natural cures for gout, such as cherry extract? I mean, obviously, there's not that much money in it.
Well, the thing is, the farmers tried to let the people know that simply there's science that shows that cherries can do this, can reverse inflammation, can help to bind uric acid and bring it out. And guess what? The FDA basically wrote practically a cease and desist letter. Your cherries are now unapproved new drugs, not recognized as safe or effective for the use indicated, simply because the farmers that grew the cherries acknowledged that the peer-reviewed medical literature showed that cherries could help people overcome gout.
So the government's going to start requiring a prescription for natural cures?
Well, if the FDA had its way, of course, that would be the case. But, of course, what happens is you stifle the First Amendment, honestly. I mean, here you got the freedom of speech no longer exists, especially when it comes to healing, because the FDA says, no. You cannot tell anybody what a botanical, an herb, a supplement, a cherry does in the body. It's as if it's inert. Why do we eat it? We don't know. And the FDA doesn't want you to know, so don't tell anybody. So you wouldn't even know to ask for a prescription for it because the growers themselves can't speak truthfully even based on the science about what the cherries do. So what they're trying to do, apparently, again, if we know them only by their actions, is protect us not from cherries because they're not suddenly dangerous new drugs, but protect the drug industry from competition from farmers. You know from your history and study in the botanical world that the soil is everything. If it's not in the soil, it's not in the plant or the food that you consume. If the animals consume the plants that don't have the vitamins and minerals in them, then you're not going to get them. They don't poof out of thin air like magic, like Bill Gates claims vaccines are magic. That's a whole other story. But what would happen is we recognize that all the food that we have, even if it's good and organic, may not be as rich in the nutrients that are vital for proper functioning. So we may have subclinical nutrient deficiencies. We're not talking about beriberi and scurvy, but by and large, the American people are not getting adequate quantities for optimal function. So we see chronic disease in evidence across the spectrum, even in children. Some with, if allergies, of course, that's a chronic disease, but that's mild compared to what I'm seeing in some children, including rheumatoid arthritis and MS, multiple sclerosis, in younger and younger people. And none of these diseases are evidence of any drug. They are evidence of deficiencies of a lot of key nutrients that would counteract a lot of the toxicological assaults, environmental assaults, for which even the American Academy of Pediatrics has acknowledged is a very big concern. But the irony about the AAP statement that they want the Environmental Working Group to warn children, warn families about these environmental toxins, is that they don't have any problem taking those same toxins and putting them in a syringe, they call it a vaccine, and injecting it into little children, including now what the NIH says is a carcinogen known to be formaldehyde, which is in vaccinations.
Have those vaccines improved over the last few years?
Well, I think we have to go back to the origin point of the reason for vaccines. It was the artificial induction of an antibody response. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against antibodies, but the way vaccines work is they basically bypass primary immunity. Most immunity happens via the mouth, the nose, the sinuses, the mucous membranes, the gut. That's where the seat of a lot of the immune system is. And so what they do is inject these things to elicit this so-called antibody response, thinking that you're automatically immune for life. But if you've had chickenpox as a child, and certainly my kids have, when I found out some kids had chickenpox, we threw a chickenpox party, got all the kids together, because I want them to have natural, conferred immunity. That's a primary immunity. It's different from the injection form. But as an adult, millions of Americans suffer from the shingles, which is caused by the same virus. Can I say it that way? The herpes zoster varicella, as they call it, the chickenpox virus, in adulthood where you have the antibodies for the chickenpox, yet you can't defend yourself because stress and nutrient deficiencies have depleted. You're depleted, and now suddenly this virus can activate, and even though you can identify it, you can't do much about it. But my argument as someone coming from a holistic perspective and a homeopathic perspective is that they're so-called barking up the wrong tree. They're looking at secondary immunity, bypassing initial immunity, and creating a lot of environmental toxicity directly via syringe into the bodies of these young people, and thus weakening and compromising their immune system because of the gut damage that can occur, not only from vaccines, but antibiotics. And this is a big problem. The overuse of antibiotics is destroying the gut. And then, of course, when you can't assimilate nutrients properly, again, the deficiency syndrome is kicking in, as well as the wrong stuff is able to get in through the lining of the gut into the bloodstream, into the lymphatic system. And now your immune system has to always act against these macromolecules and proteins that are not supposed to be in there, where a healthy gut would protect you from that. So we look like the Pentagon looks at, we've got to kill things, we've got to break things in order to protect us, and that may be true in a state of true warfare, but if we look at the body that way, we end up weaker and less able to defend ourselves. So for me, when they say, well, we've got a universal flu vaccine coming up, everybody's going to be saved from the flu, how are they going to do that when the regular flu shots are not working and they're admitted in the peer-reviewed literature? And, of course, they identify these so-called flu viruses via polymerase chain reaction. And I know you know this, PCR, which was developed by Nobel Prize laureate Kerry Mullis. And he himself recognized that if you take a fragment of genetic material and amplify it hundreds and thousands and tons, you know, so many times, you could basically say anything is there and is the cause of the ailment or the flu. But the people that suffered from swine flu were not the healthy people. It was the people that were already chronically ill. So why not focus on restoring integrity to the people that are sick instead of injecting questionable things into people that are by and large healthy and potentially weakening them? I just wrote an article recently for Survivalist magazine, and it's up on my website now, and I talk about the things that we need to know moving forward in an economic reset, because Ben Bernanke is absolutely destroying the economy by printing up Federal Reserve note dollars like there's no tomorrow, and it seems like there may be no more tomorrow for the dollar. So what do you do when you can't access the medicines? Well, you don't know about them. We've got to go back to what our ancestors knew, right? What our forefathers knew about the herbs as medicine, even though the FDA doesn't want us to know this. So I wrote a piece what I felt would be very important to know for the average American in this transitional phase of, well, let's say economic reset, for lack of a better way to say it. So on my site, I just published The Weeds You Need for Survival, before and after the economic reset, going back to what great-grandma and grandpa used to know, and also tying it into the homeopathic medicines that we all can and should have just as preparation. I mean, it used to be we could stitch up somebody at home. What happens when there's no doc in the box on the corner, right? There's a lot of people leaving the medical profession because it's, you know, under Obamacare, they're driving, you know, the people that wanted to go in for the right reasons right out of the profession. We need to learn to heal. We need to go back to take care of ourselves. And sure, if there's a crisis intervention that we need, okay, that's a legitimate use for that, what's so-called allopathic medicine.
Robert Scott Bell, thank you for coming on the Savage Nation.
Thanks again, Michael. It's always an honor and a privilege to be on with you on the Savage Nation. And you can check out this article and a lot more at my website at robertscottbell.com.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage, back in a moment.
Savage.
WOR is the next caller. Paul, you're up. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Okay, real quick, I got a lot to say and no time to say it. So you made a comment about boats and workmanship and not getting enough out of the workers. You said everybody thinks they're a craftsman just because they wash a boat. I got news for you. I was in the pizza business for 13 years, and I had to get out of it for the very same reason. You work next to a guy, he learns how to make a sandwich. He comes from another country somewhere, and you're trying to show him how to work and get better and everything like that. Not only they're not really good yet, but they start learning from you, and then as soon as they can make a sandwich or something, they try to take you over right away.
Yeah. Then they resent that you even own the store. They say you stole it from them. They were infected already with America hatred, that they're working for you. You gave them a start already. He should own your store.
It brings together everything you've been talking about, this liberalism and all this forgiveness and all this liberal way of life, is that, you know, these liberals run around wiping their noses for everybody.
But most of these liberals don't really work, Paul. They have government jobs. They work in these NGOs. And what they do is brainwash the illegal immigrant into thinking they're being ripped off. They're here as guests of the country illegally. And the fact of the matter is that's what they should be reminded of. Let me explain something to you. There used to be a thing called apprenticeship. There was a whole series of craftsmanship in this country and in Europe. The guilds protected it very carefully. The guilds have unfortunately just become unions, and there's no apprenticeship anymore to speak of. And I don't want to go into great details. I have a friend who's whose grandfather was a carpenter, came over from Greece. In order to get a carpenter's license in San Francisco at the turn of the century, you had to pass a certain number of tests, one of which was the ability to build a frame, cut a door out of raw wood, put the hinges on the door you cut out of raw wood, and prove to the man who was checking up on you that that door would swing freely in the frame that you built. Only then would you be moved up on the rankings of a craftsmanship scale. Now, compare that today to the raw workers who are working construction sites who can hardly drive a nail straight. But that's the problem today. The workmanship is poor all around. I'll give you another example. Great brands like Sony and Nikon are no longer foolproof. I have a large Sony monitor in several studios that I work in. These are like, I don't know, 18, 20-inch screens. They're beautiful big screens. You say, oh, I look at Sony. It's like, whoa, that's like a Rolls Royce. Three of these screens have failed within a year. I had to send them back to the factory. That's a Sony now coming out of Japan. I'll give you another example. 2 or 3 years ago, I bought a Nikon D70 camera. Now, today I use a smaller one, a high quality, I don't know how, megabyte. It's a great little camera. The Nikon D70 cost $1,200 when I bought it. Today I had to bring it in because a flashing light's been on now for a month. I haven't even used it for a year. But I wanted to take the big camera with me with a telephoto lens, which I own. They told me it's a warranty item with Nikon. They get 3 a week now of this D70 failing on them. And it has to be sent. It'll take 6 weeks, and then you're $200. This is what's going on now with once reliable brands like Sony and Nikon. So it's not just limited to workers who don't know how to wash a boat who want to suddenly own your boat, or a pizza guy who learns how to make a sandwich and thinks he should own the Quiznos chain. It goes all the way down to the factories. Workmanship is suffering virtually up and down the line.
But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Bill in New York. He's on the Savage Nation. Go ahead from WOR. Go ahead, please.
So I want to talk about the trade deficit, which is as bad as the budget deficit. We're going broke in both directions because the Congress, both parties, have pretty much sold out to the WTO and the common market. And, you know, the nonsense of free trade, you know, when you go to
You agree with me that we're one of the only countries on earth that still espouses the maxim that free trade is good, because we're not engaged in free trade when there are trade barriers in almost every other nation on earth.
Right. It's absolute nonsense, because in PhD school, what you talk about is trade equilibrium. Unfeathered free trade, you would go bankrupt very quickly. And
well, we have gone bankrupt very quickly because, as I say, some very powerful special interests are running the country, not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I happen to know that American manufacturers face trade barriers in the form of various and sundry taxes, which you may as well call, you can call them anything you want. You can call them tariffs, but they're not called tariffs. They're called other things, taxes and this and that. But they can dump their products on our country's doorstep without any such barriers.
Before the income tax, the whole tariff paid for the whole government of the United States. And unless we put in some tariffs, there'll be no manufacturing base left in the United States, because...
Absolutely right, which I've been calling for, and Donald Trump called for tariffs. Unfortunately, he stepped into the wrong arena, did not listen to the right people. He listened to an enemy within his own camp who led him down the birther path that destroyed him. I've seen it happen before. I tried to stop it. I sent him an email. I said, watch out. You're going down the wrong road. Don't listen to that lawyer in your organization. He's an Obama supporter. He was a Dukakis supporter. Donald, stop it. Don't go down this avenue. But I knew it was too late. I saw it happen with Bob Dole. I saw it happen with every other middle of the road Republican before. They get Democrat advisors who whisper in their ear when they're really working for the other team. So the tariff issue is a very important one, and the only way to save America right now is to, A, start raising interest rates to reflect the actual inflation that we're living in, and, two, establish tariffs. We can immediately see our country on a road to a healthier economy, in my estimation.
I have one more comment.
And also fire Ben Bernanke. Fire Ben Bernanke for being one of the biggest liars in the history of that position. How dare he stand up there and say that only government-released money is the only money that should be released into the money supply. Do you agree with me that by keeping interest rates arbitrarily at zero, what you're doing is keeping people from putting money into banks, and as a result, banks are not lending money because they don't have the money to lend?
Well, banks really don't like to lend money. What they do is they take that money that's in the savings account and they invest it in financial markets. Because 80%
They invested in what?
In financial markets, securities markets, stock markets, portfolios, like Citibank's losses.
Wait a minute. Slow down. When interest rates were at a reasonable level, banks were rushing to give loans to ordinary people for expanding their businesses or whatever. They're not doing that right now because they're not sitting on as much money.
But traditionally, 80% of the profits of most banking financial institutions has come from their portfolio, which is speculating in financial markets. That's how Citibank ran up a $400 billion loan.
Isn't that a rather recent phenomenon from when the rules were changed, the Glass-Steagall Act being removed, and the uptick rule being removed by the various and sundry administrations? But prior to that, there were much better controls which permitted banks to invest in healthier venues?
Right. But what happens is, as far as GDP is concerned, investing in financial markets or investing in putting it in a bank is the same thing. So it's equivalent as far as GDP is concerned.
Well, I guess my main point is that Benjamin Bernanke may as well be working for the ex-Soviet Politburo in terms of shrinking the money supply and constraining it so that it only flows from Obama and the administration. That's how centralized governments work. They want to control the money supply. They want to control where the money goes. And the only way they can do that is by making sure that the money to begin with is restricted. So they keep interest rates at an arbitrarily low number. People don't put their money into savings accounts. The banks are not sitting on these huge reserves as they once were. Consequently, they're much tighter in who they give money to. The money supply dries up, and the people then start to look to the centralized government for relief. That is how the Politburo worked in the ex-Soviet Union. That is how it's working under the naked communist Barack Obama. I don't give a rat's behind about Osama bin Laden, and I don't care anymore about his posturing over and over again. The man has wrecked the economy. The man has wrecked the society. Him and his wife are debasing the society. They're debasing the culture, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I am just sick of it. How could this be going on? Let me go before I say something I really mean. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.